The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
Have you ever asked, is everyone happier than me?
That was some of the hardship of this season for me, was realizing I had lost some things. Even it might not have been a death of a person, but it was loss of dreams, the loss of what I thought something could be. And even with that comes grief.
Sarah Bragg helps you identify unhealthy habits and increase connection with other people.
Everybody, I'm Tammy Trent. Welcome to Life Today. How are you today? Do you feel like you're in a good place, or maybe it's a hard place right now? Does it feel like everyone else's life is moving forward, but you're stuck and maybe a little unhappy? If that describes you, I truly hope that today offers some peace and hope to know that it won't always be like this. The rain in any storm has to come to an end. So what do you do with the in-betweens? Well, my guest today is Sarah Bragg. She's an author of a great, insightful new book titled, Is Everyone Happier Than Me? So I'm glad that you're here. Yes. I loved your book. I dove in. I've got a lot of questions for you. So let's start off at the top together. Okay. You say that it was in your 40s that you just found yourself up at night, in the middle of the night, scrolling through your phone, just feeling the unrest, the uncertainty, all the questions like life. What am I doing? What is God doing? Where am I right now? Where is my life going? Tell me about that season of your life and if it triggered something in your 40s, or was it always there?
Gosh, I feel like we always go through different seasons like this. Mm-hmm. If I could, you know, got curious and look back, you can see it, you know, maybe at graduating college when you thought, you know, you knew what you were going to do, and then you kind of figure something out and you feel lost. You're turning 30, or if you became a mom or got married, thrusting into different seasons, I feel like it can happen. For me, for sure, was in my early 40s, and I found myself waking up in the middle of the night, usually like 3 a.m., and for some reason, that was the best time to do some mental aerobics and worry about things.
Wow.
And I kind of feel like a middle schooler again in my 40s. I was raising middle schoolers at the time, and they're asking questions like, who am I? Do I matter? Does anybody like me? Is everybody happier than me? And I was like, gosh, I'm asking the same questions in my 40s. You know, you've lived a lot of life. I've had a career for an extent amount of time. You know, you're like, you've done these things. And then you find yourself waking, going, what's going on? Now what? I've gotten to this point. Yeah. This didn't give me what I thought it was going to give me. Now what? Will it always be this way? Just a lot of questions, I feel like, that we ask once we've been around for a little bit. And
gosh, what was that biggest question, do you think, like 3 o'clock in the morning that just kept coming to you and you couldn't get past it, that felt like a mountain in your life?
I feel like the title of the book is Everyone Happier Than Me. That really was it. And at the season, we had just moved from the Atlanta area to my hometown in Tennessee, and we had went from like city living to country living, and everybody would look at us and go, are you just so happy? And I would go, I'm so happy. But inside, I was not. I was just, you know, because change, again, we were just in a season of life where I thought, I would have this figured out by now. And everybody else seems to have it figured out, and they all seem happy. Am I not happy? Why am I not happy? And so I feel like that was the question that really was keeping me up, wondering, why does everybody else seem to be happy and I'm not?
Yeah, and so for me, reading through your book, the theme that kept coming up for me, page after page, sort of, chapter after chapter, was connection. You kept talking about connection. And I think the root sometimes of unhappiness, unfulfillment, is connection. You talk about the three things, connection, conversation, and curiosity. So tell me how those three words just changed sort of your perspective.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I did a lot of reading when I was searching for that happiness. I thought, maybe I can figure it out. If I read enough books, or like, you know, someone's got to have the answer to this, right? But what I kept finding was how much happiness comes down to connection. Okay. And I can see that for myself. The times where I feel the most connected to other people, or the times where I feel really connected to myself, I am happier. But the times where I feel that disconnect, that's when I am more unhappy. And so I started turning up the dial of connection in my life.
Okay.
I started making sure I was seeing people in person, having real conversation, not just, oh, I'm fine, not that fake, surface level, but meeting with people that I knew I was safe with, to be honest with.
Yeah.
I turned that up, that connection up, and happiness followed. I turned up curiosity, that idea of, you know, let me get curious, why am I feeling this way? What's going on underneath it? What has thrust me into this? Just asking questions about things really helped me find my way forward. It was that curiosity really did go a long way with that. And of course, conversation was a part of that connection piece. I needed to be able to have real conversations with people so they could see the real me.
For
right?
sure.
Instead of just, you know, the facade that it's easy to portray.
Yeah. What are some practical things that we can do?
Yeah.
And I think that we have to actually do some intentional things.
Yeah.
We have to change some things about our life if we really want to change.
Yeah. I feel like sort of like a guardrail of like when it comes to social media and putting one up and going, because I realized I feel, you know, less than after a lot of scrolling. I was feeling dread. I was feeling angst. I was like looking at people. I'm like, I'm mad at my husband. I'm mad at my dog. I'm mad at everybody after scrolling.
Because everybody else's dog looks happy.
Exactly. They're happy. Their husbands remembered everything or did all these things, and their children were perfect. And so I had to like, I just need a break. And so set a guardrail up of I'm going to take, for me, I took about 4 months off completely.
Really?
And,
okay.
And it was interesting experiment to go, how many times did my finger go to that spot on my phone once it wasn't there anymore?
Right.
But how much, I just needed a break. I needed a mental and emotional break from that. And so sometimes you're right that we just need to set that down or set limits. Give yourself, you know, of course, I'm raising teenage girls right now. And so we have time limits on their apps. And so I just need to put a time limit for myself on this, that it will shut off after 30 minutes. So I just don't endlessly do this. So I do feel like some guardrails are in place. And then I just think it goes to what you said about intentionality when it comes to connecting with others in real life. That's something you can do for your online life, but you have to be the one to reach out. I think we always want to be the one who someone is reaching out to us.
Yes.
We want to be invited,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes we have to be the ones to do the inviting.
We do. And I think that's hard. You know, I think about my own personal life and, you know, when I went through the loss of my husband, sort of walking through that, I remember coming home from that season and just laying everything down and just asking God to heal my life. And I don't even know what this is going to look like, but here I am, I'm going to just show up. And I remember getting on the phone and calling a bunch of girlfriends and said, once a month, let's get together, come to my house, let me take care of you. Cause I was always used to taking care of someone else. And now that was gone like that. So let me pour into your life, take care of you, and then bring a friend.
Yeah.
Even if I don't know him, bring a friend. And there was a bunch of single girls in my home once a month, that first year that I began to heal. But I found myself coming back to life again, based on connection that God was giving me through these friendships. But I had to ask Sarah.
Yeah.
I had to actually be the one to say, this is what I need. And I think sometimes we have a hard time asking.
It's
at least
scary.
I do.
It's
like vulnerable, laying it all out there, letting somebody know that we're not in a good place.
Right.
But we have to, if we want to get to a better place of fulfillment, I think finding happiness and joy, I think we have to be vulnerable. Yeah. You talk in your book that many at midlife are overwhelmed with grief. Mm. So I was just chatting about grief, right?
Yeah.
So I want you to explain that a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and I don't, and I'll say this up front, I don't do grief well. I don't, I don't want to be sad. I just want to like acknowledge it and let's just move on. Let's just move on. Is that fine? I was sad. I thought it'd be done.
Okay.
But I think that was some of the hardship of this season for me was realizing I had lost some things. Mm-hmm. Even it might not have been a death of a person, but it was loss of dreams, the loss of what I thought something could be.
Mm.
And even with that comes grief. I don't think I had put those words on it until I was sitting in, you know, with a counselor, and I was just kind of rattling off all that had happened over the last couple of years. And she's like, wow, there's a lot of things to grieve. And I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, I need to be, like, I should be sad. I'm okay to be sad about this.
Yes.
And so I do think there comes a point in our midlife where we've lived enough to lose some things, or to, even when it comes to, I thought that I would, you know, my body would look different at 40.
Oh,
I thought I would be the one that, like, she still looks 21. Amazing. She's, you know, 45.
Yes.
But
yes.
It just, you're naturally going to age. Like, there's just things that happen. So I think there are a lot of things to grieve when we get to this point in life. And we have to learn that it's okay to grieve.
Yeah.
But and what do you need when you're grieving? Like you said, I had to reach out to people.
Yes.
And I think that is an important thing, to figure out what you need in that season of grief to help you move through it, not to just sit and never walk through it and allow your body to even process through it. We've got to allow ourselves to grieve.
Yeah, I think there's real wisdom in that, because I can only imagine that at any age, whether we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, my parents that are in their 70s have had a lot of disappointments in life. There's great wisdom in that, to look at, gosh, we've lost a few things.
Yeah.
Let me grieve this. Let me mourn this. Let me lament. Let me look at all of this. But then also, I think the power of looking at, okay, what do I have?
Mm-hmm.
For me, Sarah, I have learned that I cannot spend all my time on what I don't have and the disappointments in life. I've got to also, I can grieve that, but then somehow, did you get to a place of shifting from that to go, okay, what do I have then in life? And how can I celebrate this?
I do feel like gratitude really is sort of the gateway into joy. And so I like, one of my daughters is really struggling with anxiety right now. And that was the first thing that I talked with her about. I went and got her a journal. She's not a journaler, but I was like, I just want every day, just what made you smile today?
Good.
Just what made you smile? I think that it starts, and it seems so, like, is that, that's just too simple to be true. Like, it feels so small, but I do think that gratitude, when I started focusing on what made me smile, what is good, just noticing that, it goes so far. It's what we need to be able to, I'm lost these things, or this isn't what I hoped it would be, but also,
this is
good.
I think that's so, so important. I think it puts it into perspective, the gratitude for sure. You talk about purpose a lot in your book, which I thought was really interesting and so true, because I think so many people can focus so much on the purpose, the end goal, and this, and it's got to be grandiose.
Yes.
It's got to be, you know, massive. And if it's not, then how disappointing.
Yeah.
Then I wasn't enough. Then I missed God's call on my life, where I didn't hear the purpose. But is there something that needs to shift and change with the way that we pursue purpose in our lives, and see it as something different, that even the little matters as much as the big?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm 45. I was raised on that, like, passion and purity, or not purity, but, you know, passion and purpose. And you've got to, like, have this grand thing. And maybe it's very American and, you know, big, you got to be big.
Yes.
And I remember being, you know, a 20-year-old someone saying, well, what's your purpose in life? And I was like, I've got to figure it out at 20. Like, my purpose, the purpose of what, you know, I just was very overwhelmed.
Pressure.
Yes.
The pressure.
So much pressure. And then when you get to the point where you're like, well, you know, maybe I'm not doing that anymore that I thought was my purpose. What does that mean? Does that mean I'm not living on purpose anymore? And so for me, a big shift helped me to just changing the word from purpose to matter. Like, you matter. In small ways, you can matter in small ways. You can be a stay-at-home mom and matter because you're taking care of all of these things. You can go to this job and maybe you're like, gosh, I'm just an assistant. And they're like, but you matter.
Yes.
This wouldn't get done if you weren't here. That is mattering. And so boiling it down to something so small has been really helpful for me in the season where, you know, I'm driving my kids from, you know, all these, like, point A to B a million times, all these little that just feel so small, but they matter.
Absolutely.
And the fact that I do it means I matter. And so it's been really helpful for me to boil it down to something small like that and see that even the small ways in which we matter are important, not just
the grand.
I heard it from Elizabeth Gilbert, author, and she told this story. And it was really one of those moments that it clicked for me,
yeah,
that I saw
me
it
too.
Differently. And she told the story of she was walking along the street, and there was a guy working on the top of a building, not like a tall building, but he was on a ladder. And she's like, I walked by, and the ladder was a little bit wobbly. And she's like, I just got really nervous that something was going to happen to him. Like, what if this ladder just, like, fell and he, you know. She's like, so I just, like, held the ladder. And she's like, he never looked down to see that I was holding the ladder. She's like, I stood there for, like, 20 minutes, just held the ladder. And then he started to come down, and I walked away. And she's like, maybe I existed on this planet to make sure that he didn't fall. Maybe purpose is as small as that little thing. Nobody else saw it, but I mattered to him in that moment. And I think it is. It's like it can be the smallest little thing, but when we shift it from it has to be big and grand and really on this scale, when we shift it to be, how do you matter in something small?
Yes.
I think it can take a whole lot of pressure off of us.
100%, I agree.
Yeah.
So for the person picking up your book, what do you hope that they get when they turn to the last page?
Yeah. I hope they feel like they're not alone, that someone saw them, that, you know, because it's really easy, and it kind of is what we said in the beginning, to feel unseen, that you can, especially we live so much of our lives online, or we live so much of our lives never really having real conversations, that it's hard to feel known and seen. And I hope that they get to the end of the book and they go, oh, I'm not the only crazy one, or, you know, or I'm not the only one who's dealt with this, that she sees me, she's got it, like, and you don't have to have it figured out, but we can take little steps and we can try different things, and that happiness really is possible, but it really comes down to connection. So I hope that at the end of the book, they go, how can I build more connection into my life, whether that's with other people, with myself, or with God, like, how can I build that into my life so that I can find a little more happiness?
Do you feel like you're finding happiness?
I am. I feel like I had to shift it and go, I'm not going to be in this perpetual state of happiness.
Yeah.
But I do find it on the daily basis, in that gratitude, in those small moments of mattering. I do find it in that.
Makes me happy to hear that. I think sharing that ride with you over here, just hearing about your life and where you're at, and my heart leans in such a way to say, man, Sarah, stay in it. Obviously, what does in it even mean? Yeah. I think it's just choosing to believe that God's got something great for you, even when things feel like they've been taken from our lives, that do I believe God is still good? Do I believe that God still sees, that He still cares, that He still hears my prayer? Mm-hmm. Even when I feel like there's so much silence in my life, is God still there? And you've got a lot of different moving pieces and parts in your life right now. And I know you've got some great dreams. And my hope for you as a new sister, as a new friend, would be that you would see great fulfillment in your life, whether now, whether later. This season, if we're in a hard one right now, it won't last forever for me, for you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I believe that God has good things for us.
Yeah.
So stay in that, stay in the trusting, stay in the knowing and believing for your life. And I'll believe that for you as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. I really appreciate you today. And, you know, I know that as I travel the world, I've seen a lot of unhappy people as well that are really suffering, that are really struggling. And I've also seen a lot of joy. And I've also seen a lot of happiness. I've seen a little bit of both. But my favorite is when I get to go to places and see the joy on the faces of children. So I want you to take a minute and watch this special time that I got to have in Central America.
These are tough conditions. These people are living in absolute poverty. I'm sure it's hard to just provide for your family. I don't know what they have. I don't know what their need is. But I love that I don't have to figure it out. God just sends us. He sends us and He says, show up. It's what I do love about Life Outreach. For the many years that I've traveled with them around the world, wherever we see a need, we just jump in, whatever it looks like. We're thinking of kingdom-minded things. We're thinking of saving a life, but saving their very life, their soul. That's, to me, that's the gospel, what it's all about, spreading the love of Jesus Christ. and sharing the good news of Jesus. You know, James and Betty started this Christmas Shoes and Smiles years ago. And I think their heart was absolutely about just showing the love of God, especially to these children all around the world. And it's so, so wonderful. The joy they feel getting something brand new. Gosh, it just could change everything for you. Oh my goodness, baby, you need these shoes. These shoes will protect their feet, will keep them from danger, keep them from infection, from injury, from hookworm, and could ultimately lead to death. This is an important need right now all around the world. So if you've given before, thank you so much. If you've never had a chance to give to this ministry, this part of it, Christmas Shoes and Smiles, then I would encourage you, make the best gift that you possibly can. We want to keep putting shoes on children all around the world. We want to do it all. It's been a great year. It's been an incredible year of ministry, whether it's been water, whether it's been food, or whether it's been shoes right here. We are so blessed to do kingdom things. And together, we are changing the lives of people all around the world. We couldn't do it without you. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Oh my goodness, I absolutely love Christmas Shoes and Smiles. I had the incredible opportunity to visit Central America earlier this year, and it was such a special experience for me again. Being with those precious children and praying with so many families in need means the world to me. For those who don't know, I was widowed before my husband and I could start a family, so I never got to have the chance to have children of my own. So when the Lord sends me to these outreaches all around the world, it's the children that weigh heavy on my heart. In those moments, they feel like my own, even if just for a moment. I want to wrap my arms around every single one of them and tell them everything is gonna be okay. On that trip, I got to do that in the simplest yet most profound way by giving them a pair of shoes. Seeing their faces light up, their smiles, and the joy a simple pair of shoes brought to them is incredibly moving. How could it not? It was a reminder of how small acts of love can have a huge impact. Christmas Shoes and Smiles is such a joyful and fun campaign that started so many years ago with the beautiful vision of James and Betty. It's amazing to see how still to this day we're going so strong, giving away countless pairs of shoes and planning to give away even more. Every pair represents hope and love to a child in need. But our mission goes beyond shoes. Did you know that for just $500, we can change a child's life forever through corrective surgery if they were born with cleft lip or cleft palate? It's incredible to think about the difference that that amount of money can make in the life of a little child. Our mission is focused on Jesus, healing, hope, and providing for people in need. I believe so much in this mission, and I keep showing up, and I will keep showing up to the day that Jesus takes me home. But I can't do it alone. I need your help. Would you show up with me today? Would you consider walking this journey with us to bring shoes to as many little feet as we can? Your support, your love, and your generosity can make a world of difference. Our goal is to provide 150,000 pairs of shoes. So if you can do $36, well, that would provide a pair of shoes for 10 children. 72 would provide shoes for 20. And 180 would provide a brand new pair of shoes for 50 children. But also right now, we have an incredible opportunity up and above our normal Shoes and Smiles budget. We have an opportunity right now to help build a $1.2 million surgical center in Uganda. How exciting is this? And it will help provide surgeries for children from around the world with severe neurological needs. Without these surgeries, many of these children will face death. Due to the support of a generous partner of life, $700,000. Imagine this, $700,000 has already been raised, but $500,000 is still needed today. In addition to Shoes and Smiles, will you consider an extra gift today, maybe $1,000 or more, that we could put toward the surgical center? That would be absolutely incredible if you could. Your generous gift could help save so many lives. So please call, write, or go online right now. Let's bring joy, hope, and healing together, and let's do it today.
For almost two decades, Life's Christmas Shoes and Smiles has continued to provide shoes for impoverished children throughout the world, as well as corrective surgeries for children with cleft palate disorders. By responding today, you can help provide new shoes for 150,000 children in time for the holidays, and for some children, a beautiful new smile. Your gift of $36 will help provide shoes for 10 children. $72 will help provide shoes for 20. $180 will help provide shoes for 50. And a gift of $500 will help provide a corrective smile surgery. This year, we have an incredible opportunity to help construct a new surgical center that will provide life-saving surgeries to children suffering serious neurological conditions. This $1.2 million project is up and above Life's normal budget. But because of one generous friend for Life, only $500,000 is needed. As a thank you for your gift of support to this life-saving outreach, be sure to request the blue crystal shoe ornament, a treasure to display each Christmas. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request this keepsake boxed set featuring four crystal shoe ornaments. Finally, please consider an extra gift of $1,000 or more to help construct Life's new surgical center. And with this gift, you may request this beautiful bronze sculpture, a cup of water. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I hope you're going online and giving the best gift you possibly could give. What an incredible opportunity we've truly been given to jump all in and make the difference in the lives of so many people around the world right now today. Sarah, thank you for being here today. Thank you for writing this book, Is Everyone Happier Than Me? It's so practical, a lot of guidance, a lot of wisdom. So thank you for pouring into our lives out of a place that, you know, you've been kind of questioning a lot of things yourself. It's been so great to talk to you. And listen, as we wrap up, I want to remind you that if you're struggling to find happiness, well, then you're not alone. It's so important to especially reach out and connect with somebody today. So please do that. You can also call that number on your screen, and we'd be so happy to pray with you. Remember, God cares deeply about your happiness and your joy. He's with you in your struggles and wants to bring you through this truly to the other side of fulfillment and happiness and purpose. Whether big or small, it all matters because you matter. One of the scriptures that encourages me is John 15:11. I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. God's desire is not just for happiness, but He wants complete fulfillment in our lives. He wants us to reach that place. And His love and care for you is boundless. So I hope today was good for you. Be encouraged. God bless you. And we'll see you next time on Life Today.
After suffering two heart attacks, Rachel Ruth Lotz Wright shares about the importance of preparing to meet Jesus tomorrow on Life Today. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.